Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Recognize what's going on in the moment of the anxiety.
This is Focus on the Family Minute with Jason Benham.
And that you have to recognize the source of it. And when I say the source, it all goes back to Satan. Satan is pulling the alarm on your fear. You are projecting powerlessness into the future, and you need to recognize it happening in the moment. Okay?
Okay.
So that's like shining the light on your enemy. All right, now that you shine the light on the enemy, how do you defeat him? Well, first, you have to renounce the lies he's tempting you to believe in that moment. The lie that you're unsafe. The lie that you need to control everything. The lie that it's all going to end in disaster. It's a lie. It's just a lie. And then you need to replace it with truth. What does that look like? It looks like replacing worry with worship in that moment. You listen, anxiety focuses on how. Worship focuses on who.
You'll find other tips for fighting your anxious thoughts today when you stop by FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Red Scooter Deli on 6th Street has a patio that you need to check out. Enjoy your favorite Red Scooter breakfast or lunch on the cozy heated patio. Order in person or online. Check out Red Scooter's Grab and Go stock daily with wide selection. Red Scooter Deli serving you fresh food for over 16 years. Red Scooter Deli is at 711 6th Street next to the Pet Center with tons of parking. Go to RedScooterDeli.com, open 6:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. Use promo code KPRL for a $5 discount.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The rest of the story. Warren was not yet 30 and already a wealthy man. The source of his wealth was drugs. Warren was a drug lord, one of the big fish. Many years in the business had hardened him, had prepared him for almost anything, until today. He and some drug trafficker partners are standing outside their establishment. They hear a commotion. They see this procession coming down the street heading their way. As it passes, they plainly observe the authorities are dragging one of their best clients behind them. The fellow appears pretty badly beaten up. And behind them, an accumulating crowd is following, and they're all moving toward the town square where public punishment is administered. Warren and his colleagues join the crowd for a closer look. In moments, they're all standing in the square. The senior official pronounces sentence. He says the prisoner has been found guilty of drug dealing. As a warning to his suppliers and to others like him, he's going to be lashed to a wooden cross and strangled to death immediately. Well, an anxious murmuring sweeps through the crowd. Warren looks at his partner, Bill Hunter, and whispers, "What do we do now? Something like this could be disastrous for their drug business. It could scare off clients in droves. What do we do now?" So Warren's friend, Bill, steps forward publicly, loudly protests the execution. Authorities present are incredulous. "Seize that man," they shout. But now the crowd is divided, and a riot erupts. Warren barely escapes with his life. And nobody even remembers whether the condemned man was spared, because it all happened so long ago. But this is the rest of the story. In 1833, an American, a young American in his 20s, left home, sailed for China, determined to make his fortune there, and to return home rich. He quickly decided how. The opium trade. And that's how Warren became a drug lord, one of the most important in Canton. Oh, he knew it was immoral, reprehensible. He knew its impact on the Chinese people was degrading, devastating. And yet at the same time, he justified drug trafficking by comparing it to the importation of alcoholic beverages into the United States. He convinced himself that it was no worse than importing alcoholic beverages. So Warren imported opium. He supplied it to the proprietors of opium dens. And when the authorities started cracking down, he somehow managed to elude the authorities. The story of this condemned opium den proprietor, this story that I have just related, was perhaps Warren's closest call during his 9 years in China. But even then, I mean even after Warren got rich and came home to enjoy his wealth, he would later return to China and again return to the opium trade. Today, probably nobody would care, except that Warren, the American who once was to China what Colombian drug lords now are to us, Warren Delano, one day would have a grandchild named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Brad Pawlowski, the assistant superintendent for Paso Robles Joint Unified School District. And we started the show by going over the bond measure. We're going to get into some other things also. But right before the break, we had a caller call in, and they wanted to know, is the district top-heavy? Has there been an increase in administrators and management, and is that causing financial difficulties with the school? And Brad, could you answer that?
Sure. Well, that's a good question, and it routinely comes up. But this is a chart that, or I have a chart that we put together for one of our last board study sessions. It's been probably a little more than a year ago. But in 2017-18, we had 333 teachers, 297 classified folks, and 83.4 management positions. And if you move out to the 24-25 year, we had 409 classified, 365, and still 83.9 management positions. So I will say that during that period of time, we have had a little bit of ebb and flow where it's gone up a little bit. I don't think we've ever gotten higher than 88 or 89 on the management side. But we continue to maintain what we feel is the bare necessities when it comes to management and supervision positions.
And I'm going to, and I know you didn't, I asked before we started, but the Supreme Court gave a recent ruling. I'm not going to ask you to comment on it. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled, I think it was Monday, that for informing parents, there was a lawsuit regarding two teachers thought that they should be able to inform parents if their children were trying to transition in schools. And that lawsuit was then joined by a group of four parents that joined, and their argument was parents had a right to know and that parents were the primary custodians of their children and that they should also have the right for religious reasons to be told about children's if they were wanting to go by different pronouns, and that they were the primary protectors of their children. Interesting enough, it was a judge ruled that they were right in California, and then it's been going through the appeal process. The appellate court ruled that the parents and the teachers were right, but then it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said until the court determines that they have to tell parents and that they believe that this is going to be a successful suit because they believe, but it wasn't, they nixed the teachers. They literally said the teachers don't have a right. They're not the primary protectors of children. they're not the primary ideology of how children are raised. That's the parents. And they came back and said that the parents are the primary protectors of their children, and they have an absolute right to know what their children are up to, and a due process rights of parents are being violated by keeping information about the children from the parents. And now it's being kicked back to the court here. It should be a very interesting thing. But one of the other issues that California has done, they've done that, and then they did the allowing transgender children into the other bathrooms. And last week at your meeting, there was a vote to allow privacy stalls for the girls. There's going to be four. But one of the interesting things that wasn't brought up, in 24, there were privacy stalls put in for the boys. There's three privacy stalls for the boys to use. Can you tell me why that wasn't brought up during the meeting, and why were the boys given privacy stalls in 24 and the girls were not?
So that's correct. At the previous board meeting, the board authorized us to move forward with installing some of those privacy stalls. The reason why they had been installed in the boys' locker room is we had done some remodel in there. We had removed some lockers. Most of the lockers had been taken out. Some of the concrete curbs that they sit on had been removed, and that was a request from the coaching staff, if I remember correctly. And so move over to the girls' side of the locker, or the girls' locker room, it was in much better condition. The lockers are being used by the students, and it hadn't been brought up to actually remove any of the lockers, and there hadn't been any remodel work that had been done in there. So we brought forward the idea that we could do similar work by removing just a smaller section of lockers there and install those privacy stalls. And so the board agreed with that. And then we're going to look at this summer installing a few more in some of the shower areas. Still would leave showers that would have privacy for them, but remove a few others that could increase the number of changing areas.
And is this also, I don't know if you know this, I do not. Is this also going through the legal system right now? Could this also be something where there is a change in what is going on with California law?
Yeah, I think any, existing law is the law until it's not. And so there's always the potential that anything that's written in statute or code that we're following as our responsibility, if there's changes, then we're briefed on those changes and we'll adjust operationally as those come up.
It's going to be an interesting year. I was actually surprised at this ruling. I was surprised because the parents got into the case later, and what the Supreme Court found was the teachers didn't have a right. The teachers were suing. They said it was their First Amendment right of freedom of speech to tell parents when their children were transitioning. And that came back, no, you don't have that right. But that the parents absolutely have the right to know, because they are the parents and they are the primary custodians of their children. I thought it was it was a surprise ruling in my eyes.
Yeah, and as we mentioned off the air, it's something, the details of it, I have not examined all the details of it, so I don't have much of an opinion on it as of yet, but it is something that, we're looking into.
And it's really just a temporary change now, because the case is not over. When the Supreme Court does that, it goes back to the other court with their findings. So it's kind of a... this case is not over. It's still moving forward. I want to now get into the negotiations with the teachers union. Okay. And I'm not, I know, here's what I think I know. The teachers want a 4% raise. The state's approved a 2% COLA raise. Where are we? The 4% raise, would that end up with some staffing reductions required? Where are you right now, and where are the negotiations?
Yeah, and I probably won't get into too many details on this, just to kind of protect the confidentiality of the negotiation process. But You are right that the teachers are, what they've announced is that they are looking for approximately a 4% increase. And the state has offered school districts a COLA, which is a cost of living allocation increase of a 2.3%. That's for the current fiscal year. So what I, the other piece that I just kind of want to clear up is that the COLA, that is a funding mechanism that is added on to what's called our local control funding formula. And the purpose of that is to help districts address general inflationary pressures across the entire educational program. It's not just meant to go to staffing. So as you know, we have increased operational costs just annually like any other business. PG&E costs go up, water costs go up, fuel costs go up. And so those dollars, that additional dollars that we receive because of that, they have to be balanced across all of our responsibilities. So that would include staff, that would include our expenses as well. The other piece to keep in mind, as we are in declining enrollment, that 2.3% increase, it actually did not equate to 2.3% for us for this current fiscal year. Because we had fewer students enroll in the district this year, it only equates to about a 1.62% increase. So so those are all of the factors that we look at when we are making an offer to our labor partners. Again, ultimately, the goal is that whatever salary increase that we offer is going to be fiscally responsible and allow the district to maintain its fiscal solvency.
And is the increases in development, there's been a lot of new residential development. There's, I noticed on Tuesday there was a 22 unit development being proposed off of Creston Road. And it appears there's constantly new residential development going up. Does that actually help with the funding?
So I would say yes and no. So we do collect what's called a developer fee or a school impact fee. So when somebody builds a home in within the boundaries of the school district, we collect a fee per square foot. And that fee is really designed to help offset the cost of any construction related to additional students that come to the district. Now, as we talk about it, you know, we are in declining enrollment. We have fewer and fewer students. But there is still a nexus between that construction and school impact. And so that fee per statute is only allowed to be used in certain ways. It's really reconstruct and construct new facilities. So we can't use it to do maintenance on our buildings. We can't use it for just general improvements like that. It really needs to be focused around any impact that students may have, additional students may have. So it is helpful from the standpoint that we can use it for specific things, but it's not going to do our general day-to-day maintenance, and it doesn't go toward the general fund. So it can't be anything that couldn't go to support any ongoing raises for any staff members.
Does the amount of tax, though, I think it's 60-some% of all the property tax is supposed to go towards schools. So if you have more property tax coming in because of more development, wouldn't that also increase the numbers?
It's a good thought. And so if you look at your tax bill in Slo County here, there's going to be a 1% assessment on the value of your home. And that 1% assessment would be divided up amongst multiple agencies. So it has to go to the county, has to go to the city, some goes to the school district, and then there's also some additional that goes to special districts. So that 1% is kind of divided up between all of those entities. And then the pot of money, I guess you could say, that the school district receives, what we call the local control funding formula, that allocation, that's set by the number of students that we have and then what the state has provides for our grant, base grants, our supplemental concentration, our home to school, our TK grants, all of those things. And if you look at the dollar amount that taxes from property tax put into that pot of money, it's only about 66% of that. So the rest of it is made up from state, from the state. So we're a long ways away from that being 100% and increasing to where all of the property taxes would actually come to the district.
But you do get a percentage of what comes in. That's why people in very wealthy areas, their schools are a little bit nicer than the schools in poor areas.
So that would be what you would call a basic aid school district. So their property tax would be enough to fill the bucket portion that they would be allocated from the state. And then anything left over, they actually get to keep. So that could be a reason why a district that would be called basic aid would be able to pay maybe a little bit higher, maybe able to use their money in different ways.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Brad today?
I would like to ask him, why isn't maintenance built into the budget? Why does every time a school needs a new roof or a heating unit, why does that have to be a bond measure?
Well, we have general maintenance. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, every time you come up with a bond measure, it's like, well, we need all this extra money to rehabilitate our deteriorating schools. And development impact fees, which are paid for new construction, are intended for the load on the system. Like you build a 1,100 house track, you got to build a new elementary school. But now with enrollment declining and you don't need the new school, they're rationalizing these charges in different ways. It's like, why do you need a bond measure for routine maintenance?
I'm going to let him answer that after we take a break for our sponsors.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages rose and recouped some of its recent losses as stabilizing oil prices eased inflation fears. Shares of oil companies like ExxonMobil and Chevron and Occidental Petroleum, among others, were down modestly, while airlines and cruise operators were mixed. Tech was the best performer among the S&P 500 sectors, while energy and consumer staples lagged. The magnificent seven big cap tech stocks were mostly higher, led by Amazon and Tesla, and shares of memory chip and data storage companies staged a comeback after falling sharply on Tuesday. Bitcoin prices rallied and traded over $73,000. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Amazon, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow decliners, Chevron, Procter & Gamble, and Salesforce. The Dow rising 238 points. The Nasdaq higher by 291. S&P 500 up 53. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
CNC Tree Service, locally owned by Randall and Shannon Clegg for 38 years. Tree removal, trimming, cabling, corrective pruning, stump grinding, brush and road clearance. They have the equipment for any residential or commercial job. If you want instant shade with mature trees, they have the only spade truck in the area to plant or move your large trees. CNC has moved oaks, manzanita, olives, palms, pepper, and various others. Licensed and insured, member of the International Society of Arboriculture. Call 805-434-0914.
With the big, beautiful bill comes new tax laws, and for business owners, that means more rules, more details, and more chances to miss important savings. This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block offices. We stay on top of every tax law change so your business stays compliant and keeps more of what it earns. From deductions and credits to full business tax preparation, our experienced tax professionals handle it all with accuracy and personal service you can trust. Don't let new tax laws cost your business time or money. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment and get your business taxes done right.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Brad Pawlowski on. And Brad, I'm going to let you answer that question. There was a question before we got off the air about maintenance and how much money do you put away for maintenance?
Yeah, appreciate that question. So general maintenance is planned into our annual budget. We set aside 3% of our expenditures. And so that 3% goes to cover the costs of our maintenance staff, any supplies that they may need, anything that may need to be replaced throughout the year, from simple things to leaking faucets all the way to brand new air conditioning equipment replacement. So that's covered within that budget. And at one point, the state used to provide some funding for what was called deferred maintenance. That's no longer provided by the state for deferred maintenance. So what our board has done is that at the end of each fiscal year, if there's a specific dollar amount that may have been unspent or that's not set aside for another expense, they move it over to what we call either Fund 40 or Fund 14. And those are deferred maintenance funds and allows us to spend on things that are more substantial. So that would be maybe like a roof replacement or replacing a parking lot, things like that. So those are one-time expenses that we try and set aside, but we budget annually for maintenance.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Brad today?
Yeah, thank you, Karen. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
I want to go back to this property tax issue for a minute. I don't know if you understand this, and I'd like the people to understand this. When you add a building fee at the beginning of a construction of a house, that fee stays with that house forever, and it becomes part of the base. And that base price is increased because of Prop 13, 2% a year for the rest of its life until they change Prop 13. That 1% you mentioned was what is on the base when a house sells. And so every time a house sells, that base, it gets increased to what the current value is. And in our county, that's 7 to 8% a year. So there's a lot more money being brought in that's not being talked about. And with a guaranteed 2% increase every year off a property besides the ones that sell that end up being 7 to 8%, it's a ton of money. And the unincorporated area in this county is less than 25% of the population and pays 50% of the county budget. So we don't get, for living out and being one of those people, we don't get that same equalization when we vote. And that doesn't even count the bonds. So I don't know how long the schools with declining children, but people keep thinking they need a raise every year with no producing results. I'd like to know how that computes.
I'm not sure how it computes, be giving teachers raises or the bond.
Okay, so you're getting an increase of guaranteed money every single year. But we're not producing kids that can read or write. We have declining students. We're worried more about the cathedral called the school and how it looks than we are on educating the kids. While you're taking our tax dollars, that's 85% of our taxes is going to benefits and checks for the teachers, and we're not educating the kids.
So what I can talk about is that the amount of revenue that the school district receives is set based on a formula that the state makes up through the local control funding formula. And then additionally on top of that, it's the number of students that we have. And so we are not guaranteed additional money every single year based on those factors. Whether the state is receiving that through increased taxes or not, that's a completely different subject and not really part of our purview. We're focused on the specific dollar amount that we receive, and that pot of money, so to speak, continues to dwindle as we have fewer and fewer students. Now, that pot of money we do receive, we hope annually, what's called the cost of living allocation, and that is to try and keep up with some inflationary costs. But again, that's across all of our operational needs, whether it's for a teacher, whether it's for just supplies that we purchase, whether it's for our PG&E. So the details around the taxes and what's coming to the district and versus the state, that's a little bit outside of our purview.
And I want to, Greg, I disconnected you. You were making some sounds. There were some sounds coming over the line. That's why I disconnected you while he was speaking. It wasn't personal. And, Brad, I also want to change the subject a little bit. I know that you had the high school students protesting, and then you had the junior high school students protesting. And I think most people do not, you know, most people believe in protests, but there's a difference between protesting and throwing water bottles at seniors trying to walk into a Walmart in the afternoon and pushing out of a school. And there is some concerns with some people that, first of all, did the school, has the school done anything about the students from the junior school? And what happened was there was a group, I guess there was around 150 students last Monday who wanted to protest. The school administration found out. They told the students, these are junior high. These are 11, 12, 13-year-olds. They told them, you can't leave the campus. And some of the students were overheard saying, well, they can block the entrances, but we can push out. And about 100 students left the school. They walked in front of cars. They threw trash at buildings. They then got all the way down to Walmart and were throwing water bottles at people trying to walk into Walmart. The police were called. The students then went over closer to the road. I was told that there was going to be some type of either detentions or suspensions of students. What has happened since then?
Excuse me. Well, first off, let me start off by just saying that type of behavior is unacceptable, and the school district never endorsed that. I think we, Ms. Loftus, our superintendent, sent out a letter that talked about there is a one, excusable absence if it is, if parents notify the school district of any kind of civil protest that a student may want to do. But outside of that, our expectation is that students are in class all day. There is that expectation, and we hold them to that expectation. If they're going to leave campus like that, we don't necessarily have the staff to be able to follow a group of 150 down the road. Their actions while they're out doing that, unfortunately, doesn't leave a very good impression on the school district or themselves. And I know that we've had conversations with the local police department. I know that the high school or the junior high principal is looking at trying to identify all the students that may have left, and the appropriate actions will take place. What or consequences will happen as well. And whatever those are, we probably wouldn't get into the details of that, but it's not something that we would find excusable.
And one of the things that some of the people have been concerned with is that there are teachers promoting the protests without giving... there are people that have ideology, and they're promoting a side, and they're promoting sometimes even a political side. And that the students aren't given, aren't aware of the laws or what is actually going on. Are you, for example, some of the students had signs saying, you wouldn't eat without us being here. Other students had signs. There were signs talking about, you can't have stolen land. You know, this is stolen land. And that there are teachers that are promoting these protests. Are you teaching the students about, because of this, is there any focus on, for example, Title 18, federal laws regarding immigration and students? For example, there's only two categories of people in this country. You're either an alien, meaning you can be a vacationer, you're not a citizen. There's only alien and citizen, and the laws are very specific on what the rules are. Is there an attempt to teach the students? We'll get to that after we answer this question. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Brad today?
Well, I'd just like to say to Brad, first of all, Brad was there. I worked with him during some very difficult times during the budget issues and some other issues with two superintendents ago. And I just want to say that Brad did a great job navigating the budget at the time. I don't think he's been given enough credit for what he's done. And I just want to say that he's a solid man. I think that he's trying to do the best thing he can with the tools that he has. With that being said, though, Brad, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to oppose this bond. And there's a whole host of reasons why, and I won't get into now. There's some serious issues, as everybody knows, about our education system. And I don't think that funding, giving it more money, is necessarily going to help. I think we got to work within the budgets that we currently have and find solutions to what we've got going on. But with that being said, I want to thank Brad for being the person that I don't think has been given enough credit.
Well, thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. And I think my maybe takeaway message from that comment is over the last 8 years that I've been here, I think we've done a pretty good job of being able to work within the budgets that we have been given. We continue to have positive certifications for our interim reports, and we continue to have approved budgets by the County Office of Education. So I think those are positive steps. And I understand that additional taxes is hard for anybody. Not an easy topic to talk about, but I just want to highlight is that the potential request, which the board hasn't approved as of yet, we're just exploring this, but the potential request would specifically be for facilities. And so, while some folks may have some challenges with public education, these specific dollars would be able to ensure that the students that are there today or in the future have access to quality facilities that allow them to really be college and career ready. So, but I do appreciate the kind words, and we'll keep going in a positive direction.
Thank you for
calling.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make one final comment. The last bond and the way that was spent, I think you did the best job you could with what you had to work with. But the decisions that were made were and the timelines and so forth and some of the ways that it was spent, I think, was there were some missteps. We spent a lot of money on things that maybe we shouldn't have, but that's water under the bridge. But I just think that the public is tired of ever increasing taxes and ever increasing without the results that we need to have. And that's just what going forward I'll be pounding away at. But nothing against you, Brad.
Thank you for calling in. We'll get an answer for Brad when we come back.
Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Your friends at Opelo Vineyards invite you to their all-new Bud Break Barbecue, March 21st at their Paso Robles Winery Estate. Your ticket includes an epic multi-course menu, wine pairings, beautiful vineyard views, and music by Leslie and the Soul Shakers, all happening from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. What better way to kick off the spring season? This is the first of several flagship events coming up this year at Opelo. See the full calendar and get your barbecue tickets at opelo.com.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vitti, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoon. I have Paso Robles Joint Unified School District Assistant Superintendent Brad Pawlowski. Well, we had three questions that I'm going to ask you to revisit. First of all, there has been concerns on what happened with Measure M. I've had people say there was supposed to be $5 million for the pool, $20 million was spent. How do you respond to concerns that of how that was handled?
Yeah, so the budgets for Measure M were put together prior to me being here, and we've had a lot of conversations with the board and the community how some of those budgets were, they just didn't plan for all of the elements of construction needed for each of those projects. So over time, the board did make adjustments, which they have the ability to do that, adjust those budgets either up or down. They have the ability to modify projects, to even change projects from different sites. And so over the years, we had to do that to keep up with just some of the needs. We also saw during that time period a lot of just changes in the district. And so those projects had to adapt. And one example of that is our Georgia Brown. As the 36th Street campus closed and we moved over to the Creston address, we needed to add some more facilities because we moved it to a TK through 8. So that's an example of how the board has just made some shifts that are allowable. The other piece is that we have a Citizens Oversight Committee that has reviewed the expenditures. And the last report that they put out, they acknowledge that the expenditures all aligned to the resolution that was passed by the board, aligned to the documentation that was voted on by the public. They did admit, and we will admit as well, that there were some errors, some things that we just could have communicated better, we could have planned a little bit better. And so, but we've learned from those, and we know that as we move forward, we'll have a much better vision of how any new projects that could come from a general obligation bond will be communicated and discussed with the community.
And I do see how things would change over time. For example, the bathrooms, the privacy stalls, things could change if the law changes.
Correct.
And back to the teachers. There have been complaints that there are some teachers promoting the protests and helping the students make the signs. Are the teachers promoting their ideology and the protests?
So from a blanket standpoint, what I would just say is that the answer would be no. We have a policy, 6144. It's called controversial issues. And it's a board policy that we know that during the educational process, there are some issues that may come up. But really, it gives guidance to our staff as to how that they're going to address those controversial issues, not letting their personal opinions get involved in that. And so we have a policy, and we intend that all of our teachers, all of our staff follow this policy. And so if there's the case where somebody doesn't follow that policy, then we would address that.
And is there an increase currently in aggression? And I'm not, this isn't at your school, but there is news information that their aggression has gone up dramatically with the ICE, it's not just that ICE is there, because ICE has been there forever. There were less people picked up under Trump than some others. But it's that the protests and the information, and it's different when they would go arrest someone, and now there's people showing up. There's allegations that children are becoming more violent. There was a child killed last week in, I think, Southern California. A water bottle was thrown and hit them in the head, and they died. There is allegations. I had a business owner call me from Arroyo Grande, tell me the students were yelling profanities at cars that didn't honk. They claimed there were teachers on the other side of the street allowing this to happen. I had someone at a restaurant here tell me that the students were throwing trash at the restaurant and slapping the front window and cursing. There were allegations of more and more violence. And then I had a family member call me yesterday and tell me that nephew or niece at the middle school was feeling uncomfortable because they felt that they might be beat up by not joining in the protests. Are you doing anything to stop the violence that's occurring?
So what I would say first and foremost is that we want to maintain a safe, welcoming environment where all students can learn. That's first and foremost. And so if we hear of anything specific like that, absolutely, those types of things will be addressed. I think from a bigger, you're originally kind of started with your question and more of a, you know, kind of a nationwide kind of view of things. I think you're absolutely right that we have been seeing just more protests, more people being engaged with being out in public and being aggressive. I think that's something that we absolutely see. But really, our responsibility as a school district is to focus on the small area that we can control and do the best that we can to control that. And those are school campuses. So we're doing everything we can to make those safe. We want to know about instances where there may be bullying or maybe pressure to be involved in something that's that wouldn't be condoned by the school. And then ultimately, we want our students and our families to be able to communicate with themselves, really have students speak with their parents in ensuring that there is a way that there can be respectful expression of how people feel, but still following school procedures.
And should there be education? That was my original question. Should there be education not only on the laws, but what's actually happening? There are people that believe they're going into homes. There are people that believe that they're just looking for brown people walking down the street. There's a lot of fear in the community. And there are press releases that go out on a regular, not press releases, they are warnings from different groups that go out and say, ICE is in your community, be careful. And there are people that don't leave their homes. They don't go to work. They don't send their children to school. And it was actually a warrant being served on a criminal. And how do we get, is there a way that you could put some security into the minds of the students to know what's actually happening in the community by education and also informing them of what the federal laws are and what's actually happening?
Yeah. Karen, I'm just going to say, you remember my title is Business Services, so okay. we're going a little outside my comfort zone. But what I can tell you is this: is that our main focus again is having a safe campus, and then we also have our responsibilities of our core instruction that we're focused on. Those are the pieces that we're focused on, and if those topics come up about safety and how federal law impacts state law and how federal law enforcement works with local law enforcement. If those topics are appropriate in the right class, the right setting, I'm sure that they'll be discussed, but that's probably a better question for our Ed Services Department.
I've just noticed that there seems to be a lot of fear. I knew a family, they didn't go to work for 3 days and didn't have their kids go to school because there was information on one of these Facebook or email blast sites. And for anyone that notices, about half of it ends up being taken. Oh, that we're wrong. That was just a guy we were following around town. But a lot of it is actually when they're going by the jails. 90% of it is there at the SLO jail or they're at the Santa Barbara jail. And they're picking up someone who is being released from jail. So they're not stopping by someone's school to pick up children or some work to pick up someone in this county at this time. It is kind of a hot button issue at this time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's a hot button issue for probably many communities around the country or around the state. But again, really our focus as a school district is making sure that students and families know that we're offering a safe learning environment for their students.
Is this taking away from the teaching a little bit when they're walking out of school like this?
Well, absolutely. Any absence impacts learning. So that's why we make sure that students understand that they have a responsibility to be there, and our expectation is that they are there during the day.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Brad? We only have a couple minutes left.
Hi. Number one, is your administration have any staff that attends California League of Cities events, and do they have influence over your policies that you hold?
That does not sound familiar. California League of Cities, no.
That's just for cities. That's not for school districts. Thank you for calling in. Brad, thank you very much for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And, dealing with some tough questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.